But I was so much more invested in the World Baseball Classic this year than the postseason.
MLB in aggregate is at least as big as the NBA, and people might not realize that.
Welcome to In the Drafts, the podcast where on the fringe tweets come to life. I'm your host, Tyler Foy, and today I am accompanied by a sports and entertainment journalist who has worked for Sports Illustrated, Outkick, and is currently on staff at the New York Post. He's run a podcast titled The Glass Half Empty and came out of Wisconsin School Business. Welcome to the show, Ryan Glasspiegel. How are you today?
Lots of research. I don't know if I'd call myself a journalist per se, but reporter, writer, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a journalist.
Well, going from private equity analyst to writing about the countless stories of James Harden's drama saga, which is really his whole career, how did that sort of happen?
I had a job. My first full-time job out of college was at an online furniture company, and this is probably about 2011 range. I quit and decided to be like a sports blogger. And about 2 years later, after scrapping on my own blog, doing a bunch of freelance, I got to SI part-time. I was there for about a year. Then I got to the Big Lead, which at the time was owned by USA Today. Jason McIntyre, who's the co-host with Colin Cowherd, founded that site, and he was my boss and brought me on. I was there for 5 or 6 years. Then I got hired by Outkick. I left that job after about a year, and I got to the New York Post about 2 years ago. So that's the cliff notes of what's about a 12-year journey.
Right, and I'll say it because I'm studying in sports. I think sports is the place to be. I think it's king. And at one point, baseball was probably king within our sports medium, but it doesn't seem that it's gone that way with World Series numbers dropping. The crown jewel of competition in baseball, the World Series, happened this past year, and it had the lowest viewership, 9.1 million, than it's had since 1973, you know, and that's a bad look for baseball. And Fox boasted that they had the highest viewership numbers for 4 out of 5 of the games. The night that they got beat out, Raiders versus Lions, Monday Night Football with 15.2 million eyeballs on it. Not the craziest matchup, I would say, to kind of take over Game 3 of the World Series. But do you think there's merit to the thought that baseball is dying?
No, I don't. It's a good question, though. And there's a lot of different directions we can go with it. So, you know, baseball, Tyler, as you know, is a big regional sport. You grew up a big Red Sox fan, or at least in a big Red Sox fan family. And once the Red Sox are eliminated, the fans don't really care about watching, you know, a Rangers World Series matchup. So World Series ratings is like one barometer with which to judge baseball. And it is a fair point. This Rangers Diamondbacks World Series was the lowest watched ever. No one disputes that. The numbers are what they are. But, you know, 70 million people bought tickets to an MLB game this season. Just weekend, like in a weekend in Boston at Fenway, there could be over 100,000 people through the gate between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so I think you have to look at baseball through a lens of like several different factors. How many people are going to the stadium? How many people are watching on the regional sports networks like NESN and, you know, Yes Network and things like that? And then how many people are watching nationally? And I would argue that baseball, when you add everything together, is in just as strong a position as the NBA. But, you know, you compared it to football. Football just dominates everything else on TV, especially the NFL. Like 26 million people watched Chiefs versus Packers last night. That's more than watched, you know, the Cubs the average Cubs, Indians, now Guardians World Series game, and the Cubs hadn't won in over 100 years. But Eric Rydholm, who created the show Pardon the Interruption, he brought up an interesting point with me in private at one point. Imagine if baseball was 17 games a year, once a week, and then the playoffs was a series of three or four one-offs, like the NFL is. And so every week in baseball, you've got the best pitching matchup. And like, so your pitcher is basically your quarterback, and you have the best lineups. There's no one in and out. People have more time to recuperate from the daily kind of grind that makes people miss, go on the injured list during the MLB season. It's like almost impossible to imagine, but what type of like spectacle do you think baseball would be if the season was structured like that? But I think that you can make an argument that MLB in aggregate is at least as big as the NBA, and people might not realize that.
Well, baseball has always benefited that it's in the summer and the other major American sports aren't being played during the peak of their season. And, you know, last year, actually, they put up revenue numbers of $10.8 to $9 billion. I have not seen the revenue splits or revenue for this season just yet. And
it's going to be higher this year. They had higher attendance.
9.6% on attendance of last season. So that's pitch clock, probably. That's a lot of factors that have gone into why people maybe be, you know, attending more games this past season. But, you know, I remember watching the Rays game in the first series of the playoffs, and nobody was in Tropicana Field. And I had a lot of concern over that factor. I was worried about what the rest of the postseason was going to look like.
Tampa's a hard market. That stadium is, I haven't actually been in it, but it's just unsightly on television. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the region is full of a bunch of transplants. That it's like a tricky spot for the Rays. But, you know, if the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Cubs or the Guardians or the Royals or Dodgers, when they're in playoff series, those stadiums get lit. And so you got to go kind of region by region. But no, I get your point on that. And then just over the last 40, 50 years, media has become so fragmented. In 1978, when the MLB World Series viewership was at its highest, there were like three channels. And if cable existed, it was barely in any homes. And then when I was a kid, there was maybe like 40 or 50 channels on cable. And now there's hundreds of channels on cable. A bunch of people don't even have cable. There's Netflix, Max, Hulu online at the same time. There's just so much more entertainment competition. And yeah, I get that the one thing it hasn't affected is football, but it has affected basketball. It has affected baseball. It has affected hockey. And so there's just so much more out there to watch that almost everything is going to get dinged by everything being so spread out.
Sure. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the, you know, once your horse is out of the race, you know, once the Red Sox are out of that race, you know, the team I'm most passionate about, I have to admit, yeah, I was pretty checked out in this postseason. Since this is in the drafts, I was ready to throw out a couple of tweets that were saying that I was so much more passionate and invested in the World Baseball Classic this year than the postseason. And yet, you know, there were so many good underdog stories this year. Yet, once again, I was just more invested in WBC. And maybe that's because it's the special occasion, because it's the one-off playoff game.
Yeah, it's because once it's every 4 years and it's sudden death and you have a rooting interest. You're rooting for America. Did you watch many like games that America wasn't involved in?
I tried to. It was like I was watching the World Cup all over again. I was trying to watch all the matchups I possibly could. I was very, very interested in how it played out. But the one game I attended was a USA versus Venezuela match, the one that finished 9-7.
And I'm sure that was a pretty like remarkable atmosphere, right?
Absolutely. I was pretty close to home plate, and you could hear the just the shift in, because the Trey Turner home run changed the game, put them in the lead, and you could hear mostly silence. I would say there was a lot of, you know, Latin fans that were there, but around my section, I guess there was a lot more Team USA fans, but I could still hear that it went a little dark. But in the conversation of international baseball and marketability and building storylines, there's been a certain section of this world that has been continuously creating more and more roads for them in sports. We saw it with the Saudi League, and now we have Baseball United in Dubai. It's inaugural season, four teams playing a different rule set of baseball that was strange. And I have to be honest, I didn't hear about this thing until the draft happened, and I saw that Didi Gregorius and Robinson Cano were drafted to play in Saudi League. And I was thinking to myself, is anybody really gonna watch this and come to their singular event? No. The stadium was empty. The coverage was little to none. I don't know if that's gonna last, but there are a lot of implications if a international baseball league other than Japan, other than Korea, gets involved, especially one that has so much financial backing. And if you wanted to watch a game in Dubai, you could probably use the sponsor of this episode, SeatGeek. SeatGeek is one of the world's leading ticketing apps that can get you any game, anytime, anywhere, helping you choose between expensive and cheap seats. SeatGeek is there for the fans' needs. You could use code DRAFTS, DRAFTS, that is DRAFTS, for 30% off on first-time ticket sales. Now, back to the episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because when the NFL goes to Europe, they draw a bunch of expat fans, but it's hard to know how many people are like actual Europeans at those games. And they've tried that with MLB putting a couple games in London, etc. It's hard to know what the upside is of a Dubai league, because I don't think the people who are from that region are probably inclined to become baseball fans. So you're trying to draw from a pool of expats.
Sure. I think that you're completely right with that. You know, I don't know if Pablo Sandoval and Bartolo Colon is going to be bringing in all the numbers, although Pablo Sandoval hit the first ever 6-run home run in the competition because they're playing by these silly rule sets. My dad said himself, it's not baseball. You're going to have a double the runs at bat and some guy can hit a 3-run home run and it's all of a sudden it's a 6-run home run. I think that's strange. We're not playing cricket. There's no sixers, but apparently there are now. So I don't know. I don't know how to really feel about it. In terms of, you know, this is all happening in the offseason, not a lot of people seeing it. Ichiro threw a 116 pitch shutout against a high school girls team, and that was making a lot more news than Dubai baseball. But these are the conversations we're having in the offseason, because the baseball offseason is relatively slow in comparison to the other sports. And do you have any idea, like any insights on what it's like for a baseball journalist to start an off season and what their reporting looks like versus like an NBA or a football journalist?
Well, I can just speak to how the free agency frenzies go more than like kind of how the journalists react to them. But so in the NBA, they announced free agency and all of a sudden everyone gets signed almost immediately. And like, you know, when Rachel Nichols was hosting The Jump on ESPN, she would have that smoke machine for every new signing, which would come every 5 minutes. And football, when they open free agency, the floodgates are open. All the big signings get done almost right away. And then like there's some scraps and maybe a star or two over the coming weeks, but it really is like a short bonanza. And then with the MLB, nobody really knows when free agency starts. It is strange. So there's a few reasons. I asked Andrew Marchand, who is a colleague of mine at the Post, about this because I wanted to get his insights. He used to cover the Yankees as a beat writer, mm-hmm. and he covered the Mets before that. So what he said, first of all, NBA and NFL have more kind of like rigorous salary cap structures than MLB does. That's going away a little bit with the NBA as they have a more punitive luxury tax, but they have max contracts. So it's like if Shohei Ohtani played in the NBA, you would already know exactly how much he's allowed to make and how long he's been allowed to sign, how long he's allowed to sign for. And so it would just be him choosing amongst a bunch of like equal bidders for whoever has the cap space, and you can make that decision relatively quickly. Whereas with MLB, with the soft cap and the luxury tax, you know, an agent like Scott Boras, who I don't think he represents Ohtani, but he's the one who started dragging these out. They can, you know, fight for every last dollar, and it's not a bunch of people making equal bids for Ohtani. And mm-hmm. so then you combine that with the fact it used to go faster. There used to be a more roaring hot stove, and stuff would really be getting done at these winter meetings that are happening right now. But now with like cell phones and the internet and stuff, just being in the same place as your negotiating counterparty is less important than it might have been 30 years ago. And so that's why we've seen those few factors are why we've seen it slow down a little bit.
I'm interested to see what happens at this winter meetings, especially with Yoshinobu Yamamoto being kind of the guy that has to, I mean, he's posted. You got 45 days when you're posted. So he's been in a lot of conversations. It's going to be quick for him to get signed. And we'll have to see how that plays out. We do seemingly have to wrap up, but before we do, I have one last question for you. Where do you think Shohei Ohtani is getting sent, and how much money do you think he's going to make?
Dodgers, $40 million a year.
Dodgers, $40 million a year. Well, you heard it here. Thank you so much, Ryan, for joining us today. Anything that you'd like to promote? Where can the people find you?
Search Ryan Glasspiegel, New York Post. Read my stories. I like it when people click on them. Much better when they do than when they don't. So thank you for having me, Tyler. And best of luck as you keep pursuing this.
Well, that will do it for the first edition of In the Drafts. If you'd like the podcast, you could follow it on your selected streaming service. And as if you liked what I said, you can follow me at Tyler_Foy on Twitter. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.